Hey, Bill Nye, the Science Guy here.
This is Salman Rushdie.
Hi, this is Julia Sweeney.
I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson.
This is Theo Wilson.
Hi, this is Dar Williams.
I'm Mr. Deity, and you're listening to The Humanist Hour. I command you to listen now, or I will smite you.
Yes, I am a sound scientist. Came to evaluate the evidence on a closed case, highly classified, confidential, in a race against the clock.
Hi, this is Todd.
And this is Jess. You're listening to The Humanist Hour, the official podcast of the American Humanist Association.
Humanism is the life stance of being fantastic without any deities.
Fantastic, huh? Hey, Todd, it's great to hear from you. I feel like it's been ages.
I know, right? Yeah, we took a little break in December, and we're doing kind of like a January-February show. So yeah, it has been a while. How's life?
Life is good.
Excellent. Excellent. So we got a great show today. We've got Rebecca Hale, the new AHA president, on, and a couple interesting things to talk about going on in the news with AHA.
Nice. So what do you got, Todd? What's happening in the news?
Well, this week is Darwin Day. Technically, it was February 12th, and pretty cool thing happening. We actually had a member of Congress, Rush Holt from New Jersey, former Jeopardy champion, by the way, actually made a proposal for a resolution on the House floor calling for a Darwin Day and for it to be officially designated Darwin Day. And it got 7 co-sponsors, which is pretty sweet, but a pretty nice thing that we're able to get the attention of Congress, and multiple members of Congress are interested in signing on, but it looks like it's not going to really go anywhere afterwards. It'll probably just die in committee of being ignored, because there's, of course, a fairly substantial aspect of Congress that I'm sure divides along nonpartisan lines, of course, that is relatively anti-science. So, so I don't think we're going to be seeing it become an official Darwin Day anytime soon, but it's cool that it's getting announced online, and it gave the AHA a fair bit of press. So that's pretty sweet stuff.
Nice. Baby steps, right?
Baby steps, so, indeed.
Todd, were you saying that Rush Holt is a Jeopardy champion, or Darwin was a Jeopardy champion?
They were both Jeopardy champions in their own way and own time. Yeah, it's a little known fact that aboard the MSS Beagle, or I guess it would be Her Majesty's ship, wouldn't it? So it wasn't a motor ship. It would be a sailing ship. So...
Alex, I'll take colored boobies for 300, please.
Yeah, I guess it would be the SS Beagle, right? It would be the sailing ship.
Yeah.
Her Majesty's sailing ship, or I don't know, the HMSS or whatever the heck. It was the frickin' Beagle. It was a dog. But they played Jeopardy regularly way before Alec Trebek.
Of course they did.
Of course they did. And yes, Darwin was the champion on board. And much, much later, Rush Holt from New Jersey was also a different type of Jeopardy, don't forget the exclamation mark, champion.
That's great. Cue Jeopardy music.
I actually saw a bunch of boobies recently. Speaking of boobies, I went to the Galapagos.
You did?
Yeah, I mean, right on target with Darwin and the like. So yeah, I saw a bunch of blue-footed boobies and even took pictures and got to go snorkeling and see sea turtles and land tortoises and all sorts of awesome stuff. It was great.
That's awesome. I feel like that's a great, I would love to go to the Galapagos.
It's an unusual place in many, many ways. One of which being, they definitely do appreciate Darwin. Like, he's a rock star there. They have Darwin t-shirts and, you know, there was a sign, the Evolution Revolution, and it was kind of like a Che takeoff, and there's Darwin with his little beret hat and
like that's cool.
An E for evolution or something like that on it. So yeah, he's like this big hero, and you definitely don't see that as much here.
No, you certainly don't.
But yeah, it was pretty sweet. I mean, you can go right up and see the tortoises with the higher, you know, the saddleback shells versus the regular shells and how they evolved, and really, really neat stuff. Got to swim with penguins.
Nice.
You don't get to do that every day. So yeah, that was a lot of fun.
That sounds awesome, Todd. Did you bring your kids?
I did, and they had a great time. It was like a safari on islands.
Yeah, yeah.
So they had an absolute blast.
Awesome. And so what did you actually do for Darwin Day, Todd? Did you have any events in your area?
There was a Darwin Day event that the Triangle Freethought Society threw. They had a party, and unfortunately, I had a conflict that night. I was going to a fundraising gala to support a local school for special needs kids. So I couldn't make it to both, but I definitely had a lot of fun at the wine party. So, yeah, let's see what else is going on. Something else AHA did since last time we had a podcast is we distributed Jefferson Bibles to all of the members of Congress as well as the president. So that's pretty cool. We AHA actually compiled the original Jefferson Bible, or his rendition of the Bible, the version where he took the original Gospels and literally cut out the parts he didn't like and reassembled it. Essentially eliminating all of the mythical sounding things and anything.
He made it good.
Yeah, he got rid of all the myths. He got rid of the resurrection, the virgin birth. He got rid of like the, I didn't come to bring peace, but the sword and all the kind of stuff along those lines, and just left what he thought were the best moral lessons. And so AHA took that, but then added to it the same type thing with a variety of other religious texts, such as the Book of Mormon and the Quran. And for those put in, like, the best of the Quran and then the worst of the Quran. And just to show that other religious texts are the same way. They have amazing moral lessons, but then they also have some creepy things like beheading and genocide. So that was distributed, and hopefully a few members of Congress picked it up and read through it and got a little education. And it also pissed off some of the folks on the religious right, because they were all like, oh my gosh, you know, this is horrible. You can't, you know, you're taking Jefferson out of context. I'm like, no, it was actually like word for word exactly what Jefferson printed. So you can't, really, you know, I guess he didn't print it, but what he cut out and reassembled. So any criticism of his version of the Bible is a criticism of, you know, the father of the Declaration of Independence, not the AHA. So.
Right. So Todd, something else that happened since it's the sort of beginning of the year, we have some changes to our board of directors at the AHA. And actually our new president, Rebecca Hale, is our guest for this month.
Indeed, yeah. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit about Becky?
Sure. So Becky, she is AHA's fourth woman president. So welcome, Becky. And she and her husband started, they founded the Freethinkers of Colorado Springs. And for those of you listeners who attend the AHA conferences, you've definitely already seen Becky. She and her husband have also taken over Evolve Fish, which is the sort of free thought evolution-based, if you will, online store. It's sort of the storefront for humanism, if you ask me. Wouldn't you say, Todd?
Yeah.
So evolvefish.com. So you've definitely seen her, you've seen her husband, and you've seen her daughter, Tanny.
So yeah, I had the honor of getting to speak to Becky, and welcome to the Humanist Hour podcast, and congratulations on becoming the latest president of the American Humanist Association.
Thanks, Todd. I really appreciate the opportunity to be on the podcast, and I'm thrilled to be able to direct a little bit AHA for the next couple of years.
Well, let's take a walk down memory lane and help our listeners get to know you a little bit. So what was your path to humanism? From what I've seen, there was perhaps a shift from Unitarianism to humanism or something along those lines. Help me and our listeners better understand that.
Yeah, for me, it's been such an easy and smooth journey. I was raised in the Unitarian Church during the time that they were, I would say, probably 90% humanist. Mm-hmm. So what really happened for me was that the Unitarian movement moved away from me. And I was fortunate enough in my last years of relationship with the Unitarians that I came across a wonderful fellow by the name of Lou Dunlap, who had run the bookstore for the American Humanist Association for a number of years. And Lou got into contact with my husband Gary and I and said, hey, I need you to take this over. I can't, I'm getting too old and I don't want to carry all these books to all these conventions all the time. He used to carry bookcases and everything. He'd load his pickup truck and off he'd go, and he really put on quite a show. So that was really how I came into official humanism, was through the back door. But I never had that struggle, Todd, that so many people have gone through, of having to confront their hereditary religion, their birth religion, whatever you want to call it, and struggle with whether it made sense to them, and then making the decision that it didn't and having to move on. I consistently say that I am in awe of people like that. It seems to me like such a Herculean effort. And for me, I never had to do it, because my parents had the good sense to bring me up in humanism. In those days, I don't know if they were aware of the American Humanist Association or not, but they were Unitarians. And so it's been easy for me.
Now, why then did you get so involved and so passionate about the movement, if it was something you kind of were always brought up around? You've certainly taken on a pretty significant leadership role. What drove you to that level of passion?
I live in Colorado Springs. I don't think I have to
enough
say
said. We can end this call. All right. That explains everything.
Out of here. Yeah, I had been on the board of directors at our local Unitarian church, and I had also taken a spin at working with the youth of that Unitarian church. And I think I did it for 3 or 4 years, and then Gary took over, and he was doing it just as Focus on the Family was moving to Colorado Springs, and there was a big push by Ted Haggard to move his New Life Church out of his basement and into big facilities. Along with all of this came a young lady who was in Gary's high school group, and she was a swimmer on one of the more northern school districts on their swim team. And they would do prayers before they would get in the water and swim for each meet. So finally, this got on her nerves enough, and she said to her coach, would you mind if I didn't come out of the locker room until after the prayer? He said, of course. And she thought everything was good, but she never got off the bench again. She wasn't in the water swimming anymore, because he told her she wasn't a team player. That was going on. Pretty close to the same time, Colorado, based in Colorado Springs, had a movement going where we were going to take the civil liberties away from gays and lesbians. It was a legislative amendment to the state constitution, which indeed did pass, and was, of course, later found to be unconstitutional. But all of these things were going on, and Gary and I looked at each other, and we said, oh, you know, we've just got to do something. And we're not artists, but we're a little bit creative, and we thought, what can we do? We need to stir this pot up a little bit and get a dialogue going. So we had located this emblem that goes on the backs of the cars, this Darwin fish thing, and we thought, okay, let's sell this. Oh, at the same time, the independent newspaper was starting up in Colorado Springs, and we wanted to support the independent. But we were both in jobs, you know, salaried positions, and we really didn't have anything that we could imagine putting an ad for in the Indy and supporting it with commercial money. So we said, let's sell the Darwin fish. And we set about doing that. I think it was in October. And Christmas Eve of that year, we're driving around town in the snow and the ice, delivering little Darwin fish and little Darwin fish coffee cups and stuff like that to people.
Which year
but
was
this? I'm thinking it was about 1993.
Okay.
Somewhere in there. History I can do as a story, but pin me down on dates, Todd, and we're in big trouble.
Yeah. Ballpark. Ballpark. I was guessing it wasn't October 2012. So.
No. We've been doing it for 20 years. We're coming into our 2013 is our 20th year.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Doing this. Yeah. It's a long time to be in the trenches. But it was really the repressive attitude of the religions in Colorado Springs that pushed me forward in this. I've always been a little bit counterculture, but it was this activity. They weren't teaching evolution in the biology classes in the northern school districts. They were teaching creation science. And this town is just really overrun by Christian fundamentalists and evangelicals, and this was our response to it. And I've been so happy. We've spent these years going to conventions of pretty much all of the national organizations, and they do each have their own character and personality. I like dealing with the humanists. They're a pretty easy crowd. They're not as confrontational, not as much a litmus test as the atheist organizations are. And yet they're willing to be fun. They're willing to take a stand. They're willing to take progressive positions. And the Unitarians just got way too conservative. So I'm happy here.
That's awesome. I definitely want to get back more to Colorado Springs a moment, but can you tell us a little bit about how Evolve Fish evolved or was naturally selected over the last 20 years? Like, where are you folks at today?
Oh, well, we've had up years and down years. We started off pretty low-key, just this little ad in the Indy, and I'd sit on the couch in the family room in the evenings and wrap these Darwin fish in half sheets of paper towel. And Gary was a geek, so he had a database from the very beginning. So it was sort of this mail order thing. And I have a nephew and a lot of family that lives in the Bay Area. So they said, put an ad in the Bay Guardian. So we did that, and that boosted business a little bit. We were really excited if we'd have, maybe six orders when we'd go to the post office box. And we didn't go to the post office box every day. It wasn't worth it. It was just little stuff. And it was fun. It was a way for us to kind of get our revenge on some of the stuff that was going on in our community. So that was our beginning. 1993, and that's where we started off. Oh, we also started a local freethinkers group at the same time.
Freethinkers of Colorado Springs, by chance?
Right. That's right. And so we initially had started Evolve Fish with the idea that it would be a nonprofit, part of the nonprofit, and it would be largely run by volunteers. We're not that good at managing volunteers. So we ended up doing all the work ourselves. And decided at some point, okay, this is going to be a for-profit, and we will support the local organization. And as we've grown, we've supported other organizations. But we've run it as a for-profit rather than as a nonprofit. We're not in our biggest year anymore. We've been hurt quite a bit by a lot of the internet stuff. Amazon has kind of destroyed the book industry, and Cafe Press has done a lot of damage to the t-shirts. But we're still enjoying it. We're still having a good time. We've got, I think Gary's got about 5 full-time employees over at the office these days. We just try to be as creative as we can. Early on, he came up with a great slogan, which is, we're an equal opportunity offender. We're going to have something that will offend an atheist. We're going to have something that will offend a humanist. We're going to have something that will offend a Unitarian. And we will definitely have something to offend the Christians.
So what is it like for you on a day-to-day basis living in Colorado Springs with some relatively fundamentalist people? And in particular, I'm interested in the influence of the Air Force Academy in the area and all the things I hear about how conservative it has gotten.
Oh, well, we were aware of the religious pressure on the cadets for quite a few years before it made the press. We would have cadets come to some of the freethinker meetings, and they would have to kind of lie to get off base. They'd have to say they were going to a church meeting or a Bible study, and then they would be given the permission to come off base, and they would come to our socials, and they would sit quietly in the back of the room, just, I think, happy to be in the same swimming pool with like-minded individuals. When the I think it was called The Passion, came out. I think that was the movie.
Oh, Passion of the Christ, the Mel Gibson movie.
Yeah, yeah, that one. We got word right away that they were having pieces of paper put on their plates or on their chairs every time they went into the mess hall, encouraging them to go see this movie. One of the gals who works for us actually ended up marrying one of the early members of the Freethinkers group at the Air Force Academy. And so we've been fellow travelers for quite a long time with the Academy, lending adult supervision and help as we can, and then letting them take off on their own as they feel, you know, they want to. We have a couple of military folks who are instructors at the Air Force Academy who are sponsoring the group up there and working with them. So it's the kind of thing we've kept an eye on. We've reached out from time to time. We had a lady who's on our board, and she would go up every week with fresh-baked home cookies to keep them well fed. So that's what we've done with the Academy. The influence of religion hasn't been so much from the Academy out to the Colorado Springs community as it has been from the religious organizations in the Colorado Springs community into the Academy. They were allowed unprecedented free access to the cadets. They were allowed into the dormitories. They were allowed into all the social halls. They were given preferential treatment for their folks to have little offices at the Academy, to have the cadets have special time off to attend religious things.
It'd be awesome if they got time off to offend religious services.
Yeah. It would be. I misspoke. It was that in was, my heart.
I think that was a Freudian slip for sure.
Probably so. So anyway, Colorado Springs is this strange community. And as I've traveled around the country a lot, I become more and more aware of just how out of the norm we are.
It seems like the whole state is kind of an unusual blend of really progressive and really conservative. I mean, Colorado recently passed, I don't recall if it was an amendment or just a state vote decriminalizing marijuana, yet it's the same state with places like Colorado Springs and anti-gay measures on the books. Just a very kind of strange dichotomy.
It is. It's a very conflicted, schizophrenic state. I think it has a lot to do with a lot of the people in the state fancy themselves as libertarians. And that is where a good percentage of the support for the marijuana laws has come from, is the libertarian component of the Republican Party has joined with the more progressives and the Democrats to get some of those liberal issues through. But then when you pull in a religious position, say on choice or maybe the environment, they lose their libertarian leanings and they become Republican. So it's interesting. We had some strong union activity in Colorado in different areas. Pueblo, Colorado, which is south of us, had a steel mill for a long time. And so that was a union. So Pueblo was a union town and thereby very Democratic. Colorado Springs was military. We have the Air Force Academy. We have Fort Carson, which is a very large Army base. We have the North American Air Defense Command under one of our mountains. They've built it into the hillside. Mm-hmm. And we have Space Command. And our climate is so wonderful that folks come here in the military, and this is where they decide to retire, because it's not like the South where you have to deal with the heat and the insects, or the far northern tier states where it gets so very cold all winter. So it's a nice climate, and they found it comfortable. So we have lots of military who are retired. And that created part of the initial conservative position.
you're a parent of a child growing up in a relatively conservative part of the country. How do you deal with that for her, and how do you help her find community?
Yeah, it's really very interesting. She's our second. Our son took it a little differently. He's 18 years older than Tani, so the climate in the community has changed quite a bit. But what I've done with all of them, well, with both of them, is just be as honest as I can with them, tell them what our position is, and let's see how they're going to handle it. The personalities of each child is, you know, they're different. And so Joshua became sort of a belligerent atheist. And he would tease his Christian friends at school and torment them. But he had he was a very tall fellow and very funny and humorous. And he always used humor to diffuse situations. Tani is more reticent. And so for her, she kind of likes to hide it. And she has a couple friends here in town who are non-believers in different school districts. And they're more of the Joshua type. But Tani is quieter. She only has a few friends who know that we're non-believers. I don't think she has any friends who know that her mother is president of the American Association. It's just not something she shares. And she keeps it very close to the chest and deals with it that way. So it's I've gotten to see both approaches.
It'd be interesting to see if her approach changes as she grows older.
Right. I mean, she's 13 now. So
yeah, it's hard to stand up strong at that age.
Yes, and it's also, you know, it is more difficult for most females.
Yeah, absolutely.
To stand outside of the norm than it is for guys, and I'm sure that plays into how she deals with it. So she loves Camp Quest.
Camp Quest is pretty awesome.
It is amazing for her. She went 1 year when she was really too young to the Camp Quest in California, and that was not a good fit. Then the last, I think it's been 3 or 4 years, she has been going to Camp Quest, Minnesota. And that one, she's made lifelong friends. And they give her the sustenance to go through her days at school without having to address the secular nature of her home.
That's fantastic. I'd like to jump back to the UUs for a moment. You had indicated earlier that it was less you changed and moved from them and more they changed and moved in a more theistic direction. Do you have any thoughts on how we as a humanist movement might be able to help nudge the UUs back towards humanism?
Boy, that's a really tough one, because there isn't a whole lot that I can say that is going to really reflect very positively back on the UUs. and I'm, since I've gotten this new role of president, I am trying to be more diplomatic, but I don't know if I can do it here. They opened their doors, which I thought was appropriate, to people who were exploring all different kinds of faith traditions. But I think what happened was they became a little bit too mercenary. They were worrying about losing their memberships and their congregations getting small. So they decided to try to be all things to all people. And as most people know, that doesn't work. What happened was the soft Christians got into the power position because I believe the UUs felt that that was the larger market segment, and they wanted to go after the soft Christians. And so in the process, they said, you know, actually, I had the minister of the local Unitarian Church. It's not the same person now, but I had the minister say to me, well, of course, Becky, you're welcome. But I can't imagine why an atheist would want to be here.
Ouch.
That pretty much told me everything I needed to know. Gary and I at that point had grown our local free thought group to about 200 people. And I was looking at bringing them into the Unitarian fold, kind of bring them under the tent of the Unitarian Church here, because I was still feeling some loyalties to the church. And I wanted the two groups to be more symbiotic. And that kind of let me know that we weren't really going to be welcome. I understand that there are Unitarian congregations in other parts of the country that are holding on tightly to their humanist roots. And they are probably the best avenue in. It can also be that the Unitarians will look around and look at the nuns and say, oh, those humanists are our market. We need to get them back. But I don't think we're going to be able to get in by beating on their doors. I think it's going to be market-driven.
I sometimes wonder if we should just start showing up, like in mass and organize. Like, we're all going to show up for their service this week, and then let's all not show up the next week and help show them numbers. And it might be hard to do, but in certain local areas...
Yeah, that's a great idea, Todd. That's far more benign than what I have in mind. Many years ago, when Tony Heilman was the executive director at AHA, we were still attending the GAs and trying to be included in that group. I had suggested to him that we should really encourage our groups to become members of the Unitarian churches and to build their numbers in the Unitarian churches and essentially take them over from within.
Right.
Because each Unitarian church is owned by its community. It is not owned by Boston. And so if the churches go with the flavor of their congregations and the flavor of their ministers.
Yep.
The other piece of it would be to use, maybe Greg Epstein at the Harvard Chaplaincy, some of the other seminary schools, because the Unitarians sort of direct which seminary schools they send their future ministers to. And then they determine who gets to see those ministers. So it's important to have a stronger humanist influence in the seminary schools where the Unitarian ministers are studying to help them refine humanism. That would be another way to do it, is to get back into those seminaries.
Right. Let's talk about AHA a bit. So what new directions would you like to take AHA now that you're the president?
That's a tough one. Everybody asks me that. And I think we have, for the most part, been doing really good things. And there's not a whole lot of need to change direction. I, however, have been very impressed by the Kids Without God website.
Mm-hmm.
And that woke me up to the potential of us putting larger emphasis on programming for children and youth, especially. When I was in the Unitarian Church as a child, as a middle school and high school person, I was very involved in what was then called the Liberal Religious Youth, their LRY program. That program sustained me growing up in Colorado Springs. It has sustained my life in a way that Tani doesn't have that kind of support right now. It would be something like the Camp Quests, but not really. It's not an overnight kind of a thing. It's something that the local groups could sponsor and hold open for middle school and high school kids, in addition to the website offering and the smaller children's programs. But I would like to see AHA get more involved in supporting our membership around the country in creating programming for children and youth.
Interesting.
So I think that's what I would add on to what we're already doing. Sometimes I'm afraid that we're getting our fingers into too many pies, that there's only so much human energy that can go into this. But our youth are so very important, and they are. We're letting them be out there to flounder. The American Humanist Association has positions on progressive values. We have positions on sex education. We have positions on the environment and morals and ethics and values. What I have seen in dealing with people outside the movement, and even some within the movement, is when they're raising children, they say, oh, well, my parents forced that religion on me, and I don't want to force my religion or my life philosophy on my kids. I want them to mm-hmm. find their own ways. To me, that's an abdication of responsibility of being a parent. I don't feel that we need to force these things on our children, and I'm careful that I have not done that with my kids. I let them know where I stand. I provide them the opportunities. I provide them with some education, but I allow them to explore. They have to know where the parent stands. If a child doesn't know where the parent stands, they're lost. And they become vulnerable to the people who will prey on them.
I think you're totally right. I've heard Dale McGowan talk about it as an inoculation, like exposing a weakened form of a disease to someone to give them a degree of immunity. And if you shield your children from religion, they're not inoculated anyway, and they're more easily, I mean, it's an aggressive word, but frankly, they are more easily preyed upon, perhaps, by people later on. And
we need to be clear, Todd, it's not P-R-A-Y, it's P-R-E-Y, preyed upon.
Exactly. And I think he's totally right in that regard. I mean, I'm paraphrasing maybe a little more aggressively than he does. He's a better diplomat than I. But the reality is, I think you're totally right. It's important for you to let your kids know where you stand, but it's also good to expose them to lots of other ideas and let them make up their own mind. Don't hide things from them, because if they've never heard of the concept of happy forever after in heaven until they hear it from someone else, it could be a problem. It could be something that ends up with more influence than it necessarily should if someone's heard about it in a humanist context.
Right. And in addition to that is what the American Humanist Association offers are some core values. I have actually run into people who have said, I don't understand, you know, not confrontationally, but just in dialogue, I don't understand. Where would I have my values? Where would my morals come from? Where would my ethics come from if I didn't have the church to tell me? And so there are people out there who would probably let go of some of the dysfunctional religious institutions if they had a good understanding that there are other places for those ethics and morals to come from. There's some just core basic human values, not dependent on religion.
I always found that concept so bizarre. Are you essentially telling me that you need to have your church tell you what your morals should be? So in other words, you're just outsourcing your moral code.
Exactly. Or they, I mean, I think a lot of it is that people don't think about it. We get going in our daily lives from the time we're little, and that time to quietly process and think about things is not there. If you study the very conservative religions, they don't want children to have that time to process. They don't want anybody to have the time to think and or to think about those things. You know, they can think about what color car they're going to buy, or what, you know, how they're going to paint their house, or what clothes they're going to put on in the morning. But they don't want people to critically analyze their belief structures. It doesn't work for them.
So what advice would you have to just members of the AHA, let's say, or humanists out there that aren't even members of the AHA, for what they can do to help and get involved and help promote the humanist movement?
Number one thing is you have to join them. You have to join, right? You have to be willing to stand up and You don't necessarily have to expose yourself to the community in that way, because it doesn't, you know, people can lose jobs. And we don't want our folks being destitute or unemployed or otherwise disenfranchised. But to support the organization, and if you're in a position, support it financially. If you're not in a position, support it with the way that you live. Support it with the way that you vote. Support it with volunteering at the school and keeping your eyes and your ears open for violations, and quietly feedback that information to the American Humanist Association, whether it's stuff you're going to feed back to the legal center, to the Apignani Legal Center, or stuff you're going to feed back to, you know, just writing it in so that we can see what's going on in your communities. And then have coffee with someone. Mm-hmm. The meetups are so easy to put together and require very little commitment. But the more that we speak out where it's safe and where, you know, where we feel that it, we won't be damaged by it, we need to speak up and say, you know, maybe it's okay to not believe in that God. Maybe it's okay to let women have choice. Maybe it's okay for our science teachers to teach evolution. It all depends on where they live and how conservative that community is, how far they can safely take their activism.
Right.
There's lots of safe ways to do it.
So I want you to project yourself into the future for a moment. When your term as board president of AHA is over, what do you want to be able to look back on with satisfaction?
Well, I'd like to look back on an organization that has doubled or tripled or quadrupled in size. I'm an organization that doesn't have to go begging to Washington, D.C. to please take our perspective into consideration when you make laws. I'd like it to be understood that secular people are moral and ethical and valuable contributors to the culture. And I'd like there to be a robust program for youth. Just as we have local groups for adults, I'd like us to have local groups for youth to get together. And it doesn't have to be fancy, just to support each other and for us to be mainstream.
I would have loved to have those kind of resources when I was young. I remember my mom suggested going to the local church youth group to meet people and meet girls and things like that. And as you can imagine that, I mean, even at the time I was somewhat religious, but skeptical. And it was like, oof, this is way over the top for me. So it would have been nice to have a secular alternative to such things for sure.
I cannot even explain how really valuable it was to me. And it really did make me capable of a lot of things that school didn't train me for. So they're skills that you learn when you're involved in a youth group. The other thing that I haven't really mentioned just briefly is that I would like, either in collaboration with Planned Parenthood or all on our own, I would like us to have an information-based sex education program that we can offer in our communities. I think it's so important for kids to really know what their options are, and all of it, not just clinical. I mean, some of these programs are so clinical that they lose sight that there really are some emotional, chemical things that happen in relationships. And those mm-hmm. are things you have to deal with. So I think a really fleshed out, scientifically based sex education program that we could offer up to the secular world would be very valuable. I'd like to see that happen too.
I'd love to see that too. And it would be valuable to non-secular people as well, because frankly, a lot of that information is not necessarily readily available in unbiased manners.
No, it isn't. Yeah, absolutely. Joshua was in a program that the Unitarians had, and I think they have since disbanded it because they got some bad publicity over it. But it was called About Your Sexuality, and it included the most practical homework. You had to buy a condom. Just those kinds of things that break the ice. Mm-hmm. So once a kid has done it once, and sure, it was scary, and he was way too young.
It was scary, but the first time I did it.
Yeah, but I can remember we were up in one of the little mountain towns outside of here, and we had gone up to cut down a solstice tree, and we stopped at one of those 7-Eleven type stop and goes or whatever it was, and Josh went in to go to the bathroom, and he came out and he says, "Can I have, I don't know how much it was, 75 cents, a buck, I don't know." He says, "There's a condom machine in there. I can do my homework. And it was such a relief to him to not have to go to a drugstore and face a clerk.
That's a lot more intimidating, I can tell you from experience.
but that kind of stuff, you know, is they got the kids into a maternity birthing center, and they all had to get up on the table, boys and girls, and put their feet in the stirrups and see all the equipment. And I'm dressed. They were always dressed.
Right.
But it was an educational experience for him that was useful and practical. And it didn't rely on him having to pretend that there were no instincts in his body. It made sense. So I'm after practical stuff that we can employ.
What do you think about doing a couple of fun things to kind of close out our segment here?
Okay. Just don't ask me to sing. You don't want that.
All right. Well, but how about on the topic of singing? If you could have, let's say, any band or musician, whether alive or dead, write a song about humanism and expressing what humanism is and its values, who would you pick and why?
Oh, you know, Todd, I'm kind of in the older generation, so most of the people, if I was going to pick somebody current, I like Adam Lambert.
Okay.
I think he's flashy and over the top, and he was raised, I think, in a Jewish background, but very secular, and everybody embraced him regardless of his orientation. If I was going to go back a couple generations in music, I think the Moody Blues.
Nice.
Maybe the Grateful Dead. Three Dog Night, something like that. I think that would be... They all had melodies. They all had ways that carried my spirit, if you want to use that word. They made me feel good, and that's what I think we're looking for. I'm not into acid rock, so that I wouldn't even know anybody in that genre. So, and well, I think, you know, Shelley Siegel is great.
She is great. She has songs that make me feel good. That's kind of what you were saying there. That's a lot of what it's about.
And we're going to have, you know, we're having Scientific Gospel on the Galapagos Mountain Boys at the American Humanist Conference in San Diego.
What is that? Educate me.
They're great. Yeah, the fellow who's head of it, his name is Stephen Baird, and Stephen is a retired now medical professor. I think his specialty was oncology, but he taught at one of the did his research at the VA hospital, I think, in La Jolla, and was involved with the California medical education system. So I don't remember exactly which university it was. But Steve figured out that if he put scientific information to music, he could get his students to remember it better.
Interesting.
And he, you know, it's not like he has the voice of a songbird, but his lyrics are so intelligent and so much fun. And he uses bluegrass as the melodies underneath. And I love bluegrass music. So it's these great science songs set to bluegrass. And he has one. I don't know if he's writing a new one for the conference or not, but we may have our own humanist song. He has one about atheists not having holidays. So he doesn't want to be an atheist because there are no holidays. And then he has one on Hallelujah Evolution, and he has one on the black hole, and he has them on pineal glands and sexually transmitted diseases. I mean, they're all, it's all over the board. He has one on old trees and one on the Grand Canyon. They're just fun.
See, I think we do have some holidays. We've got Darwin Day, and I personally like to celebrate secular Christmas. And I guess I merged some of those themes there because last year in 2011 Christmas, I gave my wife herpes for Christmas. It was one of those little stuffed animals shaped like the herpes virus. And then this year she gave herpes to her sister for Christmas. So, you know, we just do things a little differently for the holidays.
I guess you do. I didn't know there was a herpes stuffed animal.
They've got a whole bunch of sexually transmitted diseases as stuffed animals that you can pass around and give to people as presents.
Oh, how funny. Oh, that's great. I'm going to have to look for those. That's really hysterical. Yeah, I mean, we do, I don't want to call it Christmas, but essentially it is Christmas. You know, we get together, we decorate a tree, we have dinner together and share gifts and enjoy each other's company. We gather together. I'm also thinking that the 4th of July should be a secular holiday.
That we could
take over, because that there's a lot that could be written around the 4th of July that's very secular and very humanistic. I have fun with them. I don't throw any of the babies out with the bathwater.
Are you familiar with a game called Cards Against Humanity?
No.
Oh, this is a good game. It's highly entertaining, and if you don't mind, I think we might play one quick round here. You see, we'll have to play by totally different rules, because normally it's like the game Apples to Apples, where somebody reads a question and you have cards that you have to use to pick your answers from. And Cards Against Humanity is essentially a game for terrible people. I think that might even be their slogan. Most of the responses are perverted and horrible. So we can't do it full out and literally on this show. But I thought it might be fun to try that on the show on occasion. And so I grabbed a card here from the deck, and I'll let you answer it in whatever way you see fit. And try to keep it sort of PG, because this gets aired on a few radio stations.
Okay.
And I don't think we want the HA fined by the Communications Commission.
I'll try to be a good girl.
All right. So what would you bring back in time if you could time travel to convince people that you were a powerful wizard?
Boy, there's so many options.
Yes, there are. It would be really fun, too.
Yeah. I what's going through my mind is I could bring back a cell phone, but there wouldn't be anybody on the other side to call.
There'd be no cell phone towers.
Yeah, so that's not going to work.
That might convince them you're a useless wizard.
Yeah, not a very powerful one.
No.
How about, I could bring back a computer with a good strong battery.
A heck of a battery.
Yeah. Well, you know, I could get one of those solar chargers.
There you go.
To keep my computer going. And it could be fully loaded with all the games that I don't use. And some wonderful pictures of nature. And pictures of rockets and airplanes and surgeries. I guess that would be it, because if I brought back a car, I wouldn't be able to drive it. And I think a computer. Yeah, a computer with a solar-powered battery backup.
Solar-powered computer. Well, that could work, because if you loaded it with enough information before you left, you probably could actually do routine surgery better than they could.
Yeah, and of course, you know, you can't rely on the internet, so everything's got to be on the computer. It's got to be fully loaded with everything you can think of.
Nice. I like
so
that.
I guess that would be it. I'd have to go there.
Well, we're running low on time for the show. This has been awesome. Is there anything you'd like to add before we sign off?
No, I really appreciate the opportunity. There is one thing. The people that I have met in the secular movement and very especially in the humanist movement are amazing. And I am always so very grateful that I get to hang out with people of this caliber. And I get to hang out with the Todd Stiefels and the Neil deGrasse Tysons.
You didn't just put me in that same sentence. You just insulted poor Neil.
Oh, no, I didn't. No, I didn't. He's got a good sense of humor. He'd take it. Dawkins and Dennett and so many, I think the point I'm trying to make, Todd, is it's not just the famous people. It's the people that I just sit down in a casual conversation with at a convention or at a meeting. The way their minds work and the humanity and the caring that I see in these individuals gives me hope for the world. I'm just so every day grateful to be able to hang out with people like that. So I think that's the only thing I'd add.
Well, ramen to that. Well, thank you, Becky, for being on the show. We really appreciate it. And I want to just say thanks on behalf of the American Humanist Association for volunteering your time to be the president of the organization. I know it'll be a big commitment, and it's appreciated.
Thanks. It is. It's much bigger than they told me it was going to be.
Fooled you.
Oh, I knew they were scamming me. But it's okay. I'm honored, and I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be an interesting ride.
It's an honor to have you on the team, and thanks for being on the show.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Todd. Bye.
Thanks. Bye. All right. That was Becky Hale. Thank you to Becky for being on the show, and it's great to have her on board with the AHA as our new president. So, Jess, I hear changes are in the works for you.
That's true, Todd. So, listeners, this is actually my farewell show, if you will. As of the end of this month, end of February, I'll be no longer working for the AHA, but I will be working for the state of Massachusetts, which is kind of neat. And obviously, I'll still be involved in the movement, just at sort of a different level. Because, you know, you might be able to leave the organization, but you can't leave the movement, right?
Indeed. Well, we'll miss having you, and you know, maybe we can have you on the show as a guest host sometime in the future.
Sure, I would love that. I mean, definitely doing this podcast has been one of my favorite things about working for the AHA. And before that, if there are any sort of old school listeners working for the Institute of Humanist Studies, back with Duncan, I've had a blast, and I think that the listeners are great, and I look forward to seeing where you guys take the program.
Awesome. Well, good luck to you in your new role.
Thank you so much.
Well, I think that's about all for this month. Thanks for the show and everything you've done, Jess.
Hey, thank you.
All right. And listeners, if you want, you can like us on Facebook, and you can find us on thehumanisthour.org. And also feel free to call into our listener comment line, which has been a little bit silent lately. So feel free to call in and say what you're thinking, opinions, show ideas, responses, etc. at 202-618-1371. Thanks again for the show, Jess, and hopefully I'll be talking or seeing you soon.
Sounds good. Thanks for listening to the Humanist Hour, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, listeners. See you next month.
I'm gonna sacrifice myself to appease myself. I'm gonna go out and kill my kid to teach others how to live. I'll ask you to drink my blood so you remember love. And I'll threaten you with fire so you know who to trust. It all made so much sense in the thick of it. Yeah, it all made so much sense in the thick of it. I
nothing in it. Still, I'm very concerned with what you do when you're naked. I gave you half a brain, then told you not to taste it. So if you find you don't believe, it's probably best to fake it. It all made so much sense in the thick of it. Yeah, it all made so much sense in the thick of it. In the thick of it.